In 1986, I think it was, I was at a personal growth seminar in this really isolated seminar house in the mountains of the Black Forest in the south of Germany. I lived in Germany at the time. And the subject of the, I think this was like a 5-day intensive, and the subject was families. So there were 28 of us and two facilitators, and we were in one room with no furniture. All weekend, we ate there, we slept on the floor, our food was brought in, we only left the room to go to the bathroom. And what the facilitator did on the first day, he said, since this is about families, we're going to divide you into families. So he divided us into groups of four, and each group of four had to appoint a mother, a father, and two kids. And you stayed with your family all weekend. And you watched what happened. And I said, my God, I do not want to be mother or father. It didn't matter. Sex didn't matter. You could be dad and still be female. I do not want to be mother or father because I don't want responsibility. So I was a kid. And I don't remember much of the details beyond that. But so this whole weekend, you were dealing with family stuff. And the last day, I guess it was Sunday afternoon, the exercise was to draw a mandala. Do you all know what a mandala is? It's a kind of a circle. It comes from Tibetan Buddhism. The word mandala in Sanskrit means circle. And it's a circular drawing that represents the universe. So it's all very harmonious, harmonious colors. It's very symmetrical. The shapes inside are very symmetrical and beautiful colors. And it's supposed to represent harmony and all that kind of good stuff and universal values, and that everything's the way it's ought to be, because we all know our universe has a purpose and has a structure behind it. So the mandala represents the universe. So he asked us all to draw a mandala. And at the end, when we'd all done drawing our mandalas, we all sat there in a huge circle in this room. And the facilitator went around and everybody held the mandala up, and he gave his kind of interpretation of it, what that meant relative to the work we'd done over the weekend about families. So he went around and everybody held up their beautiful mandalas, and this guy's a psychologist, so he'd say, well, you know, based on what I know, this is what this means, and this is what this means, you know, depending on the shapes you chose and the colours you chose and how you put them all together. So he'd give his little interpretation of what your mandala meant, and they were all beautiful. And then he came to me, I was the very last one, and I held up my mandala. I made this morning, this wasn't it, but this is half a mandala. I was too lazy to make it a full circle. So I held up my mandala, and this is what it looked like. Something like this. This was the top of it, and this was the bottom. So like, where's the harmony and the universe in that? So he looks at me. I don't know if you can see at the bottom there. There's like a little stick figure at the bottom. Yeah. So he looked at me. He said, "What's that?" And I said, "This is my mandala." And I got really, I said, "My mandala?" And he said, "Yeah, but it's not a mandala." And he said, "And who's this down here?" And he was really scared. He said, "Who's this?" He was very German, like, "Who's this?" And I said, "That's me." And he looked at me and he said, "You have problems." And he said, really interesting, he said to me, and this was looking at what he saw and the other things I'd drawn in there and the way things were placed. He said, "You have huge problems with your father." My father was the alcoholic in the family. He said, "You have huge problems with your father." So he said, "I'm recommending you to do this another intensive thingy." So about 2 months later, I'm up in mountains top in Switzerland for another 7 days of round-the-clock stuff, where there were, I think, 14 of us and 8 therapists. This was pretty intense. So after about, and the whole topic of it was families and your relationship to your family of origin. And they gave us all these things to do during the day, and you had to reach a certain stage every night. If you hadn't processed to the point where you were supposed to be by that night, you had to stay up till you got it done. I stayed up 2 whole nights. I was a tough cookie, you know, I don't get stuff easily. So the whole thing was about family, and one of the things that I'm dealing with in detail with your family of origin. And one of the things I realised when I walked away from that 7 days was I totally transformed my relationship with my parents without even seeing them. And I realised that no matter what I thought, or whatever anguish I was going through, whatever crappy issues I was dealing with, whatever cruddy stuff I thought about my parents, in the end, they'd done the very best they could do. I don't think anyone's parents ever sat out and said, I think I'm going to screw this kid up. I think I genuinely believe they do the best they can. And I walked away from that 7 days with that belief. And that has stayed with me ever since. And I spent a lot of what happened in that week is that I ended up dealing with a lot of my childhood family issues. Not that they all went, but I was totally transformed. I went back to Germany and people would say, you know, what's happened? You've changed so much. So that helped me deal with a lot of my family of origin stuff. So the next thing that happened was I got on a spiritual path. So I kind of did the 12-step thing the other way around. I got on the spiritual path long before I knew about 12-step programs. So I got on the spiritual path and started meditating and doing all that good stuff. And then I got sick of the life I was leading in Germany and the corporation. I quit my big corporate job and relocated to Santa Monica to go to graduate school and train to be a psychotherapist. And of course, what do you do when you're trained to be a psychotherapist? You deal with your childhood crap. Yeah. And one of the things that the first 2 years were fine, it was a lot of fun, and then the class we took on, I think they called it chemical dependency, but really about addictions, whatever kind of addictions. And part of our pre-class homework was to look at our own addictions. Then after class, in class we talked about our families, and after class we did case studies. What would you do if this kind of person came into your practice and wanted help? And that was when I realised the effect that the alcoholism in my family had on me. And what came out was the two huge issues for me around alcoholism were isolation and no boundaries. I didn't have any, my family didn't have any. Isolation, I had no friends, I grew up having no friends. It wasn't all to do with my dad's alcoholism, it was to do with other circumstances of the way we lived as well. I lived way out in the boonies somewhere. And so I came out of that 4 years of graduate school. And the one thing, I never became a psychotherapist, I decided I didn't want to do that kind of work. So I went and did other things instead. But the two things that stayed for me from there were this issue of isolation and boundaries. And then I found ACA when I was living in Santa Monica. And the group I went to, it was a group we'd meet on Sunday evenings. There were only a handful of people, 5 or 6 or 7 people, maybe 10. And we were all talking about the same stuff. I mean, we all talk about the same stuff. We've all had the same experience, and just the difference is just somebody's in degree, you know. We've all had mental anguish, we've all had horrible things happen to us. And one of the things that kept coming up in this SCA group was the whole issue of isolation. So we started to get ourselves out of isolation. Every week after the meeting, we'd go out and we'd do something social. Now, either we'd go dancing, we'd go for dinner, we'd arrange to have a party, we'd have a party at one of our houses, we'd invite all our friends so we could practice being social. And that made a huge difference just in, I never learned how to make friends, I never learned how to talk to people, I never learned, I still do not know how to, I'm very good with people, I can chat to people, but I do not know how to turn a casual conversation into a friendship. If someone said, well, do you want to go for lunch? Sure, go for lunch. I don't know where to take it from there. So I've had a problem making friends all my life. So that was one of the things that I started learning in Santa Monica with this group going out afterwards, was how do you talk to people? What do you say? Because I had this idea, it's got to be this really, you know, really kind of erudite, serious conversation. I've really got to have something pretty intellectual to say. I didn't know how to do casual small talk. I'm still not good at small talk, but I've realised it's no longer anything to do with my ability to do with. I'm basically an introvert, and I'm not much good at just the chatty stuff. I do like to have deeper conversations, one-on-one conversations. So the ACA really helped me there. And I was really getting into the groove of the ACA and going out every Sunday night and doing all these wonderful things and thinking, oh, I'm doing really well. I'm learning to make friends. I'm learning how to talk to people in a safe environment. And then I moved to Santa Barbara. It was a choice, but you know, the way things happen, I ended up in Santa Barbara. And there was one ACA group in Santa Barbara, and it met over at Cottage Hospital in one of those big conference rooms. This was before they did the whole remodel. And there were about five people in that group. And we met in this conference room that would hold like 40 people. So it felt like kind of miserable and small. And kind of like huge conference, these huge conference tables. We sat around this huge, five of us sat around these huge conference tables at the table that could hold 40 people. I thought, oh man, this doesn't look good, you know. And to be honest, I went to that group for a while because I was desperate for a group where I could connect. But I'm going to offend some people, but I don't care. Everyone in that group was just moaning and whining. There was no recovery. It was all just moan. And I'd walk out of there thinking, why the hell did I bother coming? I'd walk out of there feeling worse than when I walked in. And then the group died. And I wasn't surprised it died because nobody wants to go. We all have our stuff to talk about. But when all you hear and all you can talk about all the time in a group is just the really bad stuff, and there's no even effort at recovery, there's no even hint that there could be anything different. I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle that. So I stopped going. And then I know the group died out pretty soon after that. So then, let me see, I want to get my notes here. Yeah, so my path through 12-step groups, not just ASA but other groups, kind of went a different way. Most people I know come into 12-step groups and they find their spiritual path through working in a 12-step group. I was on a spiritual path years before I came into a 12-step group. So remember one of my sponsors in one program when I lived in LA actually, and she said, you know, in a way you're lucky because you're on a spiritual path already and I don't have to talk to you about God. She said, but you're tough when it comes to the other stuff. Because I really was tough, you know, I didn't want to understand things. I didn't want to change, I wanted to be me because like it was safe. And the thing about, I know who I am and it's safe and it's familiar, and if I change, who the hell knows what will happen or what I'll be or who I'll be. It's like, if I change, I'd lose myself. I'd lose the dysfunctional self that I knew. And I didn't want to do that, so all my sponsors had a tough time with me because of that, at least in the early years of program. And what I've discovered, and I've also, and I know we can talk about this in ACA, we don't in a lot of other programs, I've done a lot of therapy, I've done a lot of personal growth stuff, and that has all helped because I think, I don't know, 12-step programs on their own were great, but I found the therapy went to a whole different level of depth that, and I can see people nodding their heads when I say that, that I wasn't getting in the 12-step program, so the combination was wonderful. And one of the issues that I was mainly dealing with in therapy as well were isolation. And remember when I was leaving LA, when I finished graduate school, I had to go back to Europe for about, I thought I was going to be gone for 2 months, I ended up staying in Europe, back in Germany for 6 months. And I remember talking to my therapist before I left LA, and she said, how do you feel about leaving? And I said, I guess easy, I'm just going to go back and I'll probably come back. I didn't know at the time if I was going to come back to the States or not. And I said, no problem. She said, you know why it's no problem for you? She said, because you don't know how to get close to people, so you never make connections, and that's why it's easy for you to pick up and move on. Because I've moved all my life. I've lived like in 7 different countries, I think, so far, and I don't have many different times within each places in each country. And I got so mad at her. That was our last session before I left. And I got so mad at her, and it took me months to realize she was so right. And then, and this is the thing that keeps coming up again in ACA, is the isolation, the either not wanting to reach out, the inability to reach out, and then the kind of the ripple effect that has on my life. It's not, and I notice how it affects my own business. I don't always pick up the phone call and make the calls I need to make to be able to keep my business going, because it's easier not to. It's just sometimes easier not to bother. So I can find myself sitting there, looking out the window. There's a beautiful tree outside my window. I can find myself looking out the window at this beautiful tree and thinking, oh yeah, I could be making calls. Well, I'm not going to bother. Yeah. And it doesn't even annoy me. It doesn't even bother me. It's like, oh, I just can't be bothered. Maybe I'll just go do my shopping, you know. So I still deal with that, with the isolation, and that's part of it, is that sometimes this inability to pick up the phone. And in my 12-step programs, I rarely pick up the phone and call people. And I think I have this in ACA, it's not that it's hard. People are friendly and people are willing. And in ACA particularly, people understand the whole isolation thing. But I still have the hardest time picking up the phone and calling people, or even texting people and saying, hey, can we chat? Because I think I still have this thing going on in my head that if I pick up the phone and call somebody, I have to have a real reason, have to say, well, I'm calling because, instead of, well, I'm just calling for a chat, or I need help, or I need support. But I think I still believe that when I pick up the phone and call somebody, there has to be a real solid reason. Like, this friend in LA, I've never picked up the phone and called him and said, yeah, what's up? And it took me years to realise that was his way of saying, hi, how are you? I thought he meant, what are you calling about? And I still have that kind of reluctance to call, because I don't have, there's no solid reason for me to call. Like, I don't have a problem, I don't have something particular I want to talk about. And it's like, I'm just calling to connect. I still have a hard time just calling people to connect for no reason other than just to say, hi, nice day, or whatever, you know. So I think my focus, because when I did that seminar way back in Switzerland all those years ago, I dug into a lot of my family of origin issues, and what I find as I go along in ACA, and the more recovery I get, I find that my focus has become more on living in the present and moving forward rather than digging around in the past. I don't dig around in the past that much anymore. It comes up, but not to the extent I did like 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. It still comes up. And that's why I didn't tell any of my sad stories tonight, because you all know them, we've all lived the same story. That's why I didn't tell you any of my, deep stuff, because we know it all, we've all lived the same stuff. And I'm looking, I like to look forward, I like to look at the present, what's happening today, what's happening tomorrow. And I'll go back to the literature, if I've got a problem of some kind, I'll go back to the literature and see, can I find anything in there that will motivate me or give me hope. When in fact what I would prefer to do would be pick up the phone and call somebody. Yeah. So I always keep coming back to the isolation and the lack of boundaries. My boundaries have gotten much better through some of the examples I've seen here and through doing my own work in the program, and particularly through running a business. When you run a business, you have to learn to set boundaries, otherwise people will walk over you and you'll lose money, and you know, you'll just be a doormat to your clients. So for my business, I had to learn that, but it took me many years of listening to people like you guys to be able to set those kind of boundaries in my business. So that boundary issue has gotten better. Even where I live in a small apartment complex of 7 units. I've gotten very good now at going out to someone and saying, you know, your music's too loud, would you turn it down? Whereas before, I would have stuck earplugs in my ear, closed my doors and my windows, and put up with it. I've learned to not put up with stuff like that anymore. But the isolation thing is still the big one for me. I'm still working on that. And I remember once when I lived in Germany, a psychic lady saying, or a medium saying once, you know, we all come into this life with one main issue that our soul has to deal with when we come into this life. And said, your issue is loneliness. And that's why I'm still grappling. And it stuck with me at the time. I thought, I don't know about that. And it's been true. It's just kind of, you know, why don't... And I do like to be alone. There's a difference between being alone and being lonely. I love being alone, but I'm alone. I spend too much time alone when I really could be reaching out, picking up the phone, calling somebody, and I don't do it. I think about it, and then I'll go make a cup of tea, I'll read my murder mystery, and then I'll forget about it again. And then I think, well, maybe somebody will call me. Well, why would they call me? There's no reason for anybody to call me, unless they have a need. They're not going to call me because they kind of read my mind and know that I'm needy. Yeah. So that's my main lesson in this program right now, is learning to reach out, and I've not done a really good job of it so far. Now that I've said this out loud in public, maybe I'll start calling some of you for no reason at all except to say hello. And so I say my path forward is staying in the present and looking at how can I have better relationships now with people now than I did, you know, way back when. And I remember my sister saying to me once, this is when my mother was still alive, my mother and I fought all the time. My dad died of alcoholism when he was 52. I think I was 19 or 18 or something like that. I say now, he should have lived forever because his organs are so pickled. But you know, that's kind of, looking back, you can say that. But I remember my sister saying to me, she said, you know, she said, I don't know what happened to you. And this was very instructive for me. She said, I don't know what's happened, but you and Mom don't fight as much as you used to. Because I'd go home, we'd just fight all the time. Because we both wanted to be boss. You know? We both wanted things our way. And she said, my sister said to her, and it's nothing to do with mum, it's something to do with you, you've changed. That was one of the biggest compliments I ever got. And it's all because of the work I've done, you know, with people like you and the other stuff I've done. That I didn't have this need to fight with my mother anymore. Because I could, because I passed the point where I cared if I was right or wrong. We used to fight because we both wanted to be right, and we both always had diametrically opposed opinions. And add to that, I grew up in Northern Ireland, where, where, you know, the whole really, the civil, when the Civil War was going on, and I had the, in those days, it probably still is that way, your religion determined your political affiliations. And I had the wrong political beliefs from my religion. I'd go home and I'd spout the stuff, and of course there'd be fights. We had fights all around, all day long, because I wouldn't give up. And I learned after a while, one of the things I learned there, and then I left Ireland. And one of the things I learned there as well was that you don't always have to be right. You can just shut your mouth. You can just be quiet. You don't always have to say everything. And that's what got me in trouble a lot with my alcoholic dad. You know, was I just opened my mouth. I was a truth teller in the family. I'd open my mouth and I'd say what I saw. Nobody else would talk about it. And when I left home, I was, I think, 17 or 18 when I left home. I must have been 18 because I was here. My dad died. My mother told my sister that everybody was glad when I left home because finally there was peace and quiet in the house. Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things I've learned, again, from people like yourself and other stuff we've done is you don't always have to open your mouth and tell it the way it is. You can, you know, you can sometimes have more peace and harmony. It's sometimes more, it's sometimes better to say nothing than to say something that's going to cause dissension for no good reason. So I've learned that along the way as well in listening to a lot of people. You don't, you just, sometimes you just zip it. Even if you want to say something's better, just look at the overall situation. Is this going to add, is this going to contribute anything to moving the situation forward? And for me, most of the time the answer is no. It's just me wanting to be right again. You know. So I've learned a lot along my way from people like you and from other things I've done as well. And so my path now is to look at what's going on in the present, how can I have better relationships now than the ones that were modelled to me growing up. And I've made huge progress in that, but I can also see there's huge progress to go. And it's like there's a never-ending journey. I would say, you know, if I'd mastered all this, really, I'd be up there with the angels. I wouldn't need to be here anymore learning these human lessons. Because I think that's what, when you've learned your human lessons, you can go. But, you know, as long as you're here, you're going to have these human lessons to learn. And I'm still learning them, and I hope with continued support from people like you, I will continue to learn. So thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.